WKJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's mostly sunny and 14 degrees in Atlantic. We look for sunny skies here today with a high around 35. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by ASI Audiology and Hearing Instruments in Atlantic. In local news, the Atlantic Police Department reports the arrest on Wednesday of 19-year-old Brady Hollander of Atlantic. Hollander was taken into custody on charges of domestic abuse, assault, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He was booked into the Cass County Jail and held pending an appearance before the magistrate. The APD said there were no serious injuries also following a collision Wednesday evening at 5th and Poplar Streets. A vehicle driven by Heather Griffin of Atlantic was traveling west on 5th at around 4:10 p.m. At the same time, a vehicle driven by Andrew Ellings of Wyota was traveling south on Poplar. Officials say when Griffin pulled out onto Poplar, her vehicle struck Ellings' vehicle on the left front corner, causing a total of $2,200 damage. Griffin was cited by police for failure to obey a stop sign. News time is 8:01.
Noise is one of the most common causes of hearing loss and one of the most common occupational illnesses in the United States. This is audiologist Doug Leonard from ASI. It only takes a single gunshot to permanently damage your hearing. It's just that quick. Repeated workplace exposure to loud equipment can also impair your hearing. My challenge to you is to protect your hearing with these simple tips. At home, turn down the volume of the television, radio, stereo, and iPods. When using loud equipment at home, such as lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and string trimmers, wear hearing protection. And at work, use hearing protection even for brief noise exposure, such as impact wrenches or nail guns. Foam plugs, ear muffs, or better yet, custom molded hearing protection from ASI can all be effective. Because good hearing is so critical, make sure that your family and friends are aware of the hazards of noise exposure. Protect the hearing that you have now. Call ASI today, and together we will determine the best way to protect your hearing. ASI, with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
Two people were arrested late Monday morning in Corning following a reported disturbance at a mobile home park. Adams County Sheriff's officials said Thursday 30-year-old Bobby Bruce and 21-year-old Michael Sickles, both from Corning, had been arrested just before noon Monday on charges of domestic assault and assault. Bruce was being held at the Adams County Jail on $1,000 bond, while Sickles' bond was set at $1,300. The Harlan Police Department said minor damage was reported to two vehicles involved in an accident on Thursday, January 17th, that's last week. A 2008 GMC driven by Rita Fanku of Harlan was pulling onto 6th Street from a parking space when the vehicle came into contact with a 2007 Chrysler driven by David Smith of Panama. Smith was going northbound on 6th when the collision occurred. Each vehicle sustained about $750 damage. The Harlan PD reports also the second accident occurred on Friday, January 18th, with a 2011 Ford driven by Corey Gaskill of Vanilla, heading northbound on 4th Street in Harlan, approaching the intersection with Hill. And that's when a 1994 Ford driven by Nicole Anderson of Harlan was heading east on Hill Street when she failed to yield to Gaskill's vehicle. The front of Anderson's car made contact with the left rear of Gaskill's vehicle, causing both to spin out. Gaskill came to rest facing, his vehicle came to rest facing south on 4th Street, and Anderson came to rest facing north. Damages amounted to $8,000. Anderson was cited for failure to yield. The chairman of the Shelby County Relay for Life said this year's event will be held around the square in downtown Harlan. Since the beginning of the relay in the county, the event has always been held at Merrill Field in Harlan, with the exception of one year due to rain. However, according to Relay for Life Chair Joel McCall, those plans have changed with the recent fundraising efforts of the Harlan Community Education Foundation. The foundation is attempting to raise $2.1 million, with $1.5 million of that going towards upgrades at Merrill Field. The Shelby County Relay for Life Committee received word the school district will be making a decision in April on whether or not the remodeling will happen at Merrill Field this year. The committee decided they could not wait until April to decide where the event on Friday, June 7th, will be held. Instead, they reached out to the Shelby County Supervisors and Harlan City Council. A letter was written to each entity asking their permission to use the square and courthouse area for the event. The letter said the committee believes the best location for the Shelby County Relay for Life event would be around the square in downtown Harlan, and they hope this would encourage more businesses to get involved with the cause. The American Cancer Society, the letter went on to say, has a certificate of insurance, so there would be no risk to the city or county entities. And the supervisors and Harlan City Council have both approved the use of the downtown square and the square in the downtown area in Harlan during their meetings that were held earlier this week. Some residents say their Sioux City neighborhood is a lot less stinky than it used to be. One of them, Danny Hauser, told the Sioux City Journal that he had avoided leaving his home in the Riverside neighborhood on the city's northwest side. He said the smell is a whole lot better now. Mayor Bob Scott is gratified that Hauser and other residents have noticed the results of the city's efforts to reduce odors. Several policy changes have been made to address longstanding problems with odors coming from Sioux City industries and city sewer facilities. City officials are considering setting up a rigorous regulatory and fining system aimed mostly at industries. Plans include setting up a panel to investigate odor complaints. A man accused of robbing a bank in Sioux City has pleaded not guilty to federal charges related to the case. Johnny Hawkins Jr. entered his plea Tuesday in U.S. District Court to federal bank robbery and firearms charges. Hawkins is charged in connection with a bank robbery in November at the Heritage Bank. Authorities say he displayed a handgun as he confronted an employee while she was opening the bank. A federal indictment said Hawkins left the bank with nearly $6,000 and the handgun. Both were later recovered. The newspaper reports Hawkins faces first-degree robbery and other charges in Woodbury County District Court. That case was dismissed, though, because of the federal indictment. The Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board is recommending a new public disclosure process for state employees who get paid by an outside group to give a speech or go to a convention. State law forbids executive branch employees from accepting gifts worth more than $3. Megan Tooker, executive director of the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, says there are exceptions if the employee is on a trade mission or speaking at a conference, as those expenses can be covered by an outside group or donor.
For example, if you go to a speaking engagement, or if you are speaking at a conference, your lodging, travel, and meals are all provided. Well, it could be a private jet, it could be the Ritz-Carlton, it could be, you know, a really expensive dinner.
Tooker is proposing legislation that would require employees in the executive branch of state government to file reports with her agency when an outside group covers $100 or more in travel or meal expenses.
If people have to report, then it might slow them down to say, maybe I need to read that section I'm relying on a little more carefully to make sure that it really does apply.
The reports will be filed electronically and posted on the agency's website so the public would have access.
There's several exceptions where you could be potentially receiving rather large gifts from a restricted donor, which is perfectly permissible under the law, but we think that maybe allowing the public and the legislature to see what exactly is being accepted is a good thing.
Employees at three state-supported universities will be covered by the new gift reporting requirement if the bill becomes law. A three-member panel of state senators has signed off on the bill. It must clear a Senate committee before it could be debated by the full Senate. Republican lawmakers say they're going to try again to ban the rare use of public money to finance abortions for low-income women. Missouri Valley Representative Matt Winschittle said that he and the other House Republicans are holding preliminary talks on a proposal to prevent Medicaid reimbursement for any abortions. Last fiscal year, the state reimbursed 22 abortions at a cost of $19,402. State and federal laws now limit abortion funding to low-income women who are rape or incest victims, whose lives will be in danger if they don't get an abortion, or whose fetuses face severe deformities. A similar effort delayed Iowa lawmakers during the end of the last legislative session as Republicans tried to push a rule banning government-funded abortions. Republicans finally gave up the effort under pressure to end the session. And Senate Republicans will introduce legislation requiring that Iowans present photo identification in order to vote. Senate Minority Leader Bill Dix of Shell Rock said Thursday that the law would protect the integrity of the voting system. Existing Iowa law doesn't require voters to show voter identification. Although Democrats say Iowa has little history of voter fraud, Republicans argue the risk remains and identification should be required. The bill is modeled after similar legislation introduced by Secretary of State Matt Schultz. A Senate aide says that filing the Senate bill demonstrates Republicans' support for the idea. Democrats have opposed Schultz's proposal. They argue Republicans are motivated by a desire to discourage voting by groups who typically favor Democrats, such as immigrants, low-income people, and the elderly. Taking a look at our world headlines of this hour. Anti-abortion demonstrators are gathering at the National Mall in Washington and in front of the Supreme Court today to mark the 10th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the court decision legalizing abortion. The demonstrators plan to march and hold a rally at noon. Former Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum is a scheduled speaker. The Education Department will tell the nation's schools today that students with disabilities must be given a fair shot to play on traditional sports teams or have their own leagues. Education Secretary Arne Duncan said disabled students should have the same opportunity to benefit from the life lessons they can learn on the playing field or on the court. A judge is holding secret hearings in the case of the man convicted in the 2001 murder of Washington, D.C. intern Shadra Levy, but attorneys in the case aren't saying why. Ingmar Gwandike was convicted in 2010 of killing Levy, whose body was found in Washington's Rock Creek Park. The case captured the nation's attention because of Levy's relationship with California Congressman Gary Condit, who was initially a suspect in her death. News time is 8:10.
Noise is one of the most common causes of hearing loss and one of the most common occupational illnesses in the United States. This is audiologist Doug Leonard from ASI. It only takes a single gunshot to permanently damage your hearing. It's just that quick. Repeated workplace exposure to loud equipment can also impair your hearing. My challenge to you is to protect your hearing with these simple tips. At home, turn down the volume of the television, radio, stereo, and iPods. When using loud equipment at home, such as lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and string trimmers, wear hearing protection. And at work, use hearing protection even for brief noise exposure, such as impact wrenches or nail guns. Foam plugs, ear muffs, or better yet, custom molded hearing protection from ASI can all be effective. Because good hearing is so critical, make sure that your family and friends are aware of the hazards of noise exposure. Protect the hearing that you have now. Call ASI today, and together we will determine the best way to protect your hearing. ASI, with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
In our funeral announcements, Carl Gilman, age 95, of Stewart, died Tuesday at the Stewart Community Care Center. Funeral services for Carl Gilman will be today at 10 o'clock in Stewart at the Stewart Mount Vernon United Methodist Church. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. Ralph Galeson, age 81, of rural Westside, died Monday at the Manning Plaza. Funeral services for Ralph Galeson will be held today at 10:30 at the Odie Funeral Home in Manning. Marilyn Harder, age 76, of Greenfield, died Monday at Greater Regional Hospice Home in Creston. Visitation for Marilyn Harder will be today from noon until 8 p.m. at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. Carl Burnham, age 70, of Stewart and formerly of Dallas Center, died Sunday at the Stewart Community Care Center. Funeral services for Carl Burnham will be today at 1 o'clock at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. George Raymond Morton, age 89, a native of Griswold, died January 13th in San Diego. Graveside services for George Morton will be today at 2 o'clock in the Whipple Cemetery northwest of Griswold. Dune Funeral Home in Griswold has arrangements. Marvin Osborne, age 93, formerly of Avoca, died January 18th in Arizona. Services for Marvin Osborne will be today at 2 o'clock at Trinity Lutheran Church in Avoca. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca has arrangements. Stephen Lee Anderson, age 62, of Harlan, died Monday at the Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Funeral services for Stephen Anderson will be today at 5 o'clock at the Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Arlene Stem Stevenson, age 102, of Arlington, Texas, died January 19th in Arlington. Funeral services for Arlene Stevenson will be held tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the United Methodist Church in Menlo. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. Jane Claver, age 77, of Harlan, died Monday at Murtu Medical Center. A mass of Christian burial for Jane Claver will be tomorrow at 10:30 at St. Mary of the Assumption Catholic Church in Panama. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has the arrangements. Ralph Harrington, age 64, of Round Rock, Texas, died January 18th. Graveside services for Ralph Harrington will be held tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the Cedar Park Cemetery in Texas. Beck Funeral Home of Round Rock is in charge of the arrangements. Jim Cady, age 98, of Coon Rapids, died January 19th at Thomas Rest Haven in Coon Rapids. Funeral services for Jim Cady will be held Saturday at 11 o'clock at the First Christian Church in Coon Rapids. Odie Funeral Home in Coon Rapids has arrangements. Lois Hill, age 91, of Manning, died Tuesday at the St. Anthony Hospital in Carroll. Funeral services for Lois Hill will be Saturday at 2 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church in Manning. Odie Funeral Home in Manning has arrangements. Sharon K. Blott, age 64, of Elkhorn and formerly of Avoca, died Wednesday at the Salem Lutheran Home. Funeral services for Sharon Blott will be held on Monday at 11 o'clock at the Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca. Irene Sterrett, age 96, of Audubon, died Monday at the Friendship Home. A memorial service for Irene Sterrett will be held on Monday at 1:30 at the Friendship Home in Audubon. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has the arrangements. Ann Clifford Welker, age 70, of Stewart, died Wednesday at the Cavanaugh House in Des Moines. Funeral services for Clifford Welker will be held Tuesday at 10 o'clock at the Stewart Congregational Church, with the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart in charge of arrangements. That is a check of our funeral announcements here on KJAN, brought to you by ASI Audiology and Hearing Instruments at 601 Poplar in Atlantic. Call 243-5796. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.